Thank you for joining The Healthy Way. I am Dr. Roy Spicer, biochemist and water quality specialist with Clean Water Revival in Stuart, Florida, with my co-host Kim Jones, pharmacist with Prescription and Wellness Shop of Stuart, Florida. Well, hello again. This is Dr. Roy Spicer. We are on the air on the Healthy Way show, and I'm here with my co-host Kim Jones. Kim, tell us a little bit about your background.
Hi, Dr. Roy. Thank you. Yes, I am Kim Jones, and I am a licensed pharmacist here in Florida. I've been practicing for almost 20 years here on the Treasure Coast. I have a pretty diverse background in pharmacy. I've done retail, I've done independent, I've done mail order, I've done specialty, pretty extensive background. I currently do own the Prescription Shop and Wellness Center in Stuart, Florida, where my staff and I are committed to caring for members of the community like they are family.
Today we're going to discuss preparedness, how to survive natural disasters, which is a very relevant and timely topic. Florida has suffered many hurricanes over the last decades, and the last one that we were exposed to was Hurricane Irma, which mostly affected the West Coast, but it was a pretty devastating storm. It was a Cat 3, and there's still residual effects from it. So hopefully this year we won't have that many hurricanes affecting the East Coast, but you always have to be prepared. Preparedness is really a mindset. Most people really don't prepare until the last minute, and that leaves you kind of vulnerable to many different problems. And in order to survive a natural disaster, you really have to be totally prepared. And that doesn't just include having some batteries and candles and a little bit of extra water around. Unfortunately, according to FEMA studies, that most people don't prepare for emergencies. And it's a mindset, again, that until the last minute, until you're told to evacuate, you're really not doing enough. And why is this important? Because, first of all, if you look at the recent Hurricane Florence, and I have clients up in North Carolina, South Carolina, a lot of them were trapped. A lot of them don't have water now. You don't have potable water, and you need water to survive. You have to have at least several weeks' worth of potable water to survive a disaster, because you don't know how long it's going to last, and you don't know if the emergency people are going to get you rescued. You might be stuck in your house, and you have to take care of your family, and water is the number one priority. But there's really a lot of things you should have around the house, and I'm sure some of you have seen a number of lists, but there are some very good priority items you should have. First, again, is water. Now, there's different ways of stocking water, and how much water do you really need? Well, the average person needs 3 to 4 liters a day. That's close to a gallon of water a day. So if you have 3 people in the house or 4 people in the house, you really need 4 gallons of water per day to survive. And if you have a week or two where you need water, that's going to be a lot of water. And that's a lot of bottled water. So you need a little bit more than just stocking bottled water. There's a lot of ways you can have water supplies stored, and there's a lot of ways you can make potable water after a storm. So we're going to talk about that for a minute. First, you can use 5-gallon jerry cans. There are some good plastic non-leachable cans. You can get them from Canada. You can store water in there for 6 months, taking water out of your sink, put a little bit of chlorine in there, tighten it up, and you should keep probably 5 jerry cans worth of water. So that would give you 25 gallons of water. There are other devices you can store water in. So if you know a storm's coming, you can fill up your bathtub. They have this water bob. It's a big plastic container you can fill up with about 50 gallons of water. So if you fill that up, 2 tubs of water, you have 100 gallons of water that can be stored pretty conveniently. So between water bobs and jerry cans, you could put about 125 gallons of water stored. So that, for 4 people, will give you about 2 weeks or more worth of water. Now, what happens if the storm lasts longer and you're out of communication or you don't have electricity? We've had storms where you're out of electricity for weeks. And if you don't have power, the treatment plants, the water treatment plants, don't operate, so they can't chlorinate the water. So right now in parts of North Carolina and South Carolina, people do not have potable water. So they have to rely on whatever stores they have, whatever they prepared for. And once the FEMA people can get in, or sometimes the military, they can get them water. But you really can't count on that. You have to have enough water to carry you through that period until the rescue people get there. So the next step is finding sources of water. There are many sources of water. Toilet water can be cleaned up. in the back of the toilet bowl, not in the front, but in the back you have water. You have your hot water heater. You could have your swimming pool. If you have a swimming pool, it's a great source of water because you have chlorine in it, so it's already disinfected. But you want to take that water and clean it up and get rid of the residual chlorine. So those are two real good sources of water. If you have a lake, river, or stream nearby, well, of course, after a disaster, it's not going to be potable. Unfortunately, now in parts of the Carolinas, you have a lot of farms that a lot of animal waste has gotten into the water supplies. We even had that in Hurricane Sandy back in 2012, where the sewage treatment plants overflowed and spilled out water into the drinking water supplies. So the water wasn't potable. And what I mean by potable, it's free of disease-causing bacteria. And that's very critical. You cannot drink water that's contaminated with bacteria because you'll get very sick and can die. So before you drink any water, after a storm, it has to be disinfected other than your bottled water and your storage water. So if you're going to take water out of a tap, even after the city or the municipal supplier says it's safe, you still need to disinfect it. Now, they're going to disinfect it themselves, but sometimes it's not enough when it reaches your house to kill all the bacteria. So you should have some disinfection chemicals around, basically Clorox. And what you can do is you can add about a quarter teaspoon, which is about 8 drops, for each gallon of water. And let it sit for a half hour, stir it up, and that usually will disinfect the water. In addition, you can filter the water, which I think is a very good idea. There are emergency filters on the market. Mostly what I like are ceramic filters because ceramics have been proven to remove bacteria and parasites. So after you disinfect the water, you can put it through, they have these gravity units where you can pour the water in that's chlorinated, and it will clean out the residual bacteria and parasites, and then you'll actually have very clean water. You can continuously use that.
Hey, Roy, can I ask? I know here in Florida we've had the boil water, where they tell you to boil the water first. Is that another way we can do it? Is if you have electricity, you could boil the water? Do you still need to add the Clorox to it? That sort of thing.
Yes, that's an option. Here's the thing. Depending on how soon after the disaster, a lot of the water has debris in it, sediment and debris. So boiling the water actually will kill the bacteria, but it concentrates some of the other contaminants like sediment. So we do recommend, yes, you would do that, but you want to reduce the sediment. So you can take a clean bucket, for example, put a T-shirt over it, pour the water through that, then you can boil that water. That's one option. But you have to boil the water for at least 3 minutes at a rolling boil to kill most bacteria and parasites.
Okay.
And again, it depends if you have electricity or gas. When you don't have it, then you have the other option to disinfect the water and filter it. Those are your options.
Okay.
In addition, there are other devices where you can find rainwater. Some people collect catchment water. You can have a barrel outside for the catching rainwater. You may have a well. Now, the thing with wells, they will get contaminated from the sewage that gets into the water. And we have several feet of standing water. You definitely have to disinfect your well. And until you test it and know the bacteria are clean, you can't drink that water right out of the well.
So that brings up a good question. I'm not a well water girl, don't know a whole lot about it. Does a person who has a well, will they have a testing kit themselves, or do you have to call a company to come test that water out of a well to be sure that it's drinkable after some sort of a situation or national disaster?
Well, after a disaster, or even on a regular basis, it's really difficult to test the well for E. coli and disease-causing bacteria. So preferably, you'd want to take a sample to a lab where they have test kits you can use, and you can send them to a lab, but it takes a couple weeks. Local labs generally will turn around the samples in a couple of days, but you really want to make sure 100% that you don't have any E. coli in the water, because if you drink that water, you'll get sick and potentially could die. It's a pathogen. It's a disease-causing bacteria. The main thing is that you have something to carry you through generally several weeks to a month. And what's happening lately, some of these natural disasters, even though they're not very strong hurricanes, they leave a lot of water. Houston's a perfect example of that. That was Hurricane Harvey. So some areas of Houston were somewhat okay, and they got back in functioning within a week or two. And other areas of Houston for months were out of commission. So you really don't know how long you're going to be without power. You don't know how long you're going to be without potable water. So you have to have water and then food. So the two things you need to do is stock up on food and water first. and have equipment where you can make potable water. Now, some of the things that I recommend for food, you have storage food. There's a lot of companies out there that sell 5-year, 10-year, 20-year storage food. But again, you have to reconstitute it with water. So some of them are self-heaters, with like MREs. Those are good for a couple of years. You can use those. If you want longer-term storage, you're going to need to have nitrogen-packed food that can last up to 20 years. So you need a mix of different types of food products, and it's got to be food that you normally eat. For example, you don't want to just buy 100 pounds of beans if you don't normally eat them. That could create some gastrointestinal problems for you.
That could be dangerous, Roy.
It could be. So you want to have a mix of things like protein. Sardines are very good. We have a lot of sardines we keep around. You need some crackers and cheese. You could have cans of tuna fish. Other things you need, you have food bars. There's protein bars. There's pure protein. So you have a mix of food that at least will give you enough calories and give you the minimal nutrition you need to survive for a couple of weeks, in addition to your water.
I really like the protein bars and protein shakes, because a lot of those nowadays, they will provide you with what you need protein-wise to at least sustain, and they're a meal replacement. So you can get all you need from one bar for a meal. As far as the protein shakes, a lot of them require water to reconstitute. There are some out there now, though, that come and you don't even have to refrigerate them. I've seen them at Publix even. So that, you know, that's a great idea for somebody to keep on the shelf, as opposed to sometimes I feel like when we're having a hurricane, you run to the grocery and the shelves are empty of stuff that, exactly like you said, you know, people do not eat on a regular basis. And if someone has high blood pressure, I get really nervous about their sodium intake, because a lot of the stuff is packed with sodium. So that's where a protein bar. I'm big on raw nuts. So if you could keep some raw almonds, cashews, walnuts, stuff like that, you get some protein from that as well, as long as you don't have a nut allergy. But those are some great recommendations, Roy, for food, because I think everybody thinks grab all the bread and peanut butter you can get, or all the beans, like you said. But I think a variety is important, and I think it's important to be able to get protein and the calories you need from the food you're eating.
Well, one of the things you have to decide is, are you going to shelter in place or are you going to evacuate? If you're sheltering in place, again, all the things we're mentioning are for surviving in your home, if you can stay in your home. Now, some cases you can, some cases you may have to evacuate. And when you evacuate, you really need a go bag. And what a go bag is something that will carry you from point A to point B. So let's say you're going from your house to a shelter. Well, the shelter could be a couple miles away, it could be 10 miles away, or you may have to evacuate the state. A lot of people in the last storm, Irma, they left the state, and they were going up. Some people we know went up to Tennessee. Then they got stuck in traffic. So you could be in a car for several days getting out of the area, depending on when you leave. So you need a go bag. And what's in the go bag? The same thing. You need water. You need food. You need certain items that, you know, in case you have to get water and there's no water around, you could get a product called a life straw if you had to take water out of a pond or a stream. You could carry a portable water filter. And there's a couple of things that are recommended. You need a change of clothes. You need some toiletry items. And you know, we'll get into the medications, because, again, there are people who need medication and they have to take medication on a daily basis. So what would you recommend as far as the medications, Kim?
Well, there's a few things. So the one thing that I think is so important is everybody should do this once a year at least anyway. But when you're coming into hurricane season, it's a good idea to go to your pharmacy and have them print you off a list of your current medications that you take, who prescribed them, how you're taking them, and put that in your go bag. Because if you do have to evacuate for, you know, let's say a month even, not everyone remembers their entire medication profile, and there may be some as needed meds on there or a fungal cream that you may need. And it's important to me, or you, let's say you're hurt, let's say that you're taken somewhere, it's important for someone to know what medications you're on and also have your allergies on that sheet as well. As far as your medications go, I think it's very important to have a very minimum of 14-day supply on hand, 2 weeks. Nowadays, the general consensus is more of about 30 days, a full month on hand. And the states have gotten good to kind of pair up with these insurance companies. And once the governor says it's a state of emergency, and we did have that in our last hurricane here last year, most insurance companies will allow a 30-day supply to go ahead and be filled of your medications. So that is something everyone should think about. So even if you have 2 or 3 weeks on hand, go get that extra 30 days worth. That just means if you don't need it ahead of time because there wasn't a hurricane or you didn't have to evacuate, you still take it and you just put off your next refill for 30 days later. I think that's very important. A lot of people don't realize that the insurance companies will allow an override like that.
I have a question. Now, some medications, some liquid medications, and you probably know which ones, need refrigeration for a certain period of time. So what happens now? You're on the go, and your medications that require refrigeration don't have it. How long can they last? And then what do you do from that point forward when they're not effective?
You know? I'm glad you asked that, Roy. So insulin is the number one that generally comes to mind for people because you cannot live without your insulin. So when it comes to insulin, it's more important not to freeze your insulin. A lot of people want to pack it in, stick dry ice on it, or pack it in a whole bunch of ice, and then they end up freezing the insulin, which causes more harm than if the insulin was not refrigerated. So insulin can go up to room temperature for about 28 days. And I'm going to say that's the majority of insulins out there, whether it's in a pen or it's in a vial. It's not preferable that we do that. But in a situation such as this, you can keep it out of the refrigerator. I would try to keep it in a cool, dark space the best you can. You don't want it sitting in the sun, sitting in a hot car. So keep it as cool as you can. And the other thing is to visually inspect it. So if it changes colors, if it's got particles floating in it, do not use that insulin.
Well, again, this is Dr. Roy Speiser, and my co-host is Kim Jones. We'd like to hear from our listeners with questions or comments. We can be reached at the station at 888-221-8990. Again, our number here at the station is 888-221-8990. We'd like to hear your questions or any comments on what we're discussing today. That's very important information. It's life-critical information. Now, in a lot of situations, we have people with babies and, you know, they have to change their diapers. So how do they remain hygienic when you're on the go? And what would you recommend people take? You know, I'm sure they're going to take a lot of diapers, but again, until they get to a shelter or where they're going, they might be on the road. And, you know, you got to think of all these different situations about childcare. You may have elderly people that need help or assistance. So what are some of the things that people need to do if they're transporting or they're in the middle of going from point A to point B in an emergency, especially with children, young children?
Young children, I think one of the key things to have on hand with young children is Pedialyte, because in a lot of situations, it's going to be hot. You're going to be sweating. The air, you have no air conditioning. And it's very easy for children and elderly to get dehydrated. Even the elderly can drink Pedialyte, but it puts back those electrolytes that they may be sweating out that just plain water is not going to do. So I think it's very important to have some Pedialyte on hand for children. The other thing is, if you're not breastfeeding and you have a child on formula, you need to think about, is it a dry powdered formula? Because then the water supply comes into hand, Roy, just like you had mentioned earlier about having clean water. You may want to even consider trying to switch or bring into the child's food regimen a different formula during that time, or something that's not going to totally disrupt their wreak havoc on their gut, you know, if you do have to change in a situation. It's very important to have their medications. If they are on a medication, it's very important to have a diaper rash cream, because I can almost promise you, if it's hot out, they're sweaty, we have no air, conditions are not good, diaper rashes are going to be at an all-time high. It's very uncomfortable for a child to have that. Those are a few of the things I feel like for...
We have a call coming in. Let me answer. We lost the call. All right, so other things that we're talking about, hand washing, hygiene, you know, of course, diapering, cleaning and sanitizing. These are all critical issues that we have to deal with. And I know hand sanitizer, you lot, them. We have a call coming in. Hello, you're on the Healthy Ways. Dr. Spizer, how may I help you? Oh, lost him again. Well, we're trying. We've got a few technical problems here, but I think some of the information you gave is critical. And if people want more information, where can they reach you?
They can reach us at area code 772-287-3443. That is the Prescription Shop and Wellness Center of Stewart. And just ask for any pharmacists on duty, and we would be happy to go over any questions or concerns that you may have in an upcoming situation.
Okay, we'll try to take this call. Hello, you're on Healthy Way.
Hi, Dr. Roy. This is Tim. I'm up in Vero. I do have a gravity filtration unit that I kind of use now and then on a regular basis, but I'm wondering if I'm starting to filter more heavily contaminated water, the kind of situation you're talking about. Does that change what happens with my filters or filter life? What do I need to worry about with that?
Well, if you have an emergency gravity filter with a ceramic, yes, you may get more debris in the water, so you would have to clean the filters. Ceramics are cleanable with a piece of Scotch-Brite. Also, like I mentioned earlier, you could take the water, put it in a through a T-shirt that's over a bucket, clean bucket, to get out any debris, and that's a common problem. That we saw that a lot after Hurricane Sandy in New York. A lot of the main water pipes, the big pipes, were just full of debris from the beaches and from the storm. So storm debris is always a problem. So you should filter that out by taking a clean bucket, a 3 or 5 gallon bucket, put a T-shirt over it, pour the water through that, and then put it into the gravity filter. That'll eliminate a lot of the clogging of the filters. But eventually the filters will accumulate surface dirt, and you can clean them off with a piece of Scotch-Brite. That's one of the unique features. But you have to be careful with the source water. Now, if you're not going to take municipally treated water after a storm, and you're going to go out for a lake or a stream or any water surface water source that was contaminated, you definitely need to do the first step, which is cleaning out the debris. Second step would be putting chlorine into that source water, like I said, about 8 drops or 1/8 tablespoon, and let it sit for 20 minutes. Then it's disinfected the water. You can remove the residual disinfectant through the gravity filter and remove any smaller particles and possibly parasites. Then it's drinkable. So that would be the process that I would recommend. That comes from the military. I've literally reduced down the process that the military uses, because they're all over the world and they deal with very poor quality water, non-potable water. So in a post-disaster situation, you want to take several steps to clean water up to be absolutely assured you're not going to be drinking any pathogens.
Okay, I'm sure, I guess, once the emergency's through, you probably want to discard those.
Yeah, I would suggest, you know, a lot of people have filters under the sink and on the counter that they use on a regular basis. So the first step, and I'm dealing with this up in North Carolina, we had several calls. When a storm is coming and you're going to evacuate, shut the main water off. Just shut your main water off. Don't let any water into the house, because if you do, when you come back, the lines are already contaminated. So you're going to be allowing some of these disease-causing bacteria into your pipes in your house. Then you're going to have to disinfect that, and you may get sick in the process of using that water. Then it contaminates filters in the house. So we generally recommend shutting the water off, waiting several days till after they issue the boil alert, and the boil alert is over. Then you can run the water into the house, because at that point they've disinfected the system. There's most likely no bacteria in the pipes, because they check it, and then you can use the water safely. So even when you come back after a disaster and it's over, you have to be careful on where you're drinking water. So you should have some bottled water around, and then wait until the post-boil alert is over. There's going to be a lot of chlorine in the water, so they're going to kill all the bacteria, and then the water's generally safe to drink, but you should filter it anyway.
All right. Thank you very much, Doctor.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling. So these are realities, practical realities we have to deal with after a storm. And there's been a lot of disasters the last year. You know, we've had hurricanes, we've had floods, we've had fires out in California. So after all these situations, and our experience has been people that had emergency filters and had prepared to survive. And we have another call coming in. Hello, you're on a Healthy Way. Oh, we dropped the call. So again, having all the preparedness, you can go on to the FEMA line. You can find out more information. Hello, you're on a Healthy Way.
Dr. Roy.
Yes, sir. Is this Dr. Stephen Kringle?
This is Dr. Steve. Right. How are you doing?
Very good. Well, welcome to the show. I want to tell all the listeners that Dr. Steve Kringle is a very famous surgeon, and he has a website. He's retired, but he has a website called, or a Facebook called, Ultimate Survival Zone. So I just want to let people know you're a great resource for information about preparedness. And we were talking about post-disaster situations, what to do. Do you have any insight? We have about 1 minute left. Can you give us any information about your Facebook?
Yeah, it's if you go onto Facebook and you look under Facebook groups, it's called Ultimate Survival Zone. And if you put that into the little search engine, it'll bring that up along with some other survival sites. But mine is called Ultimate Survival Zone. And, you know, we've got all kinds of information. You've done a great job covering a lot of the basics. We do as well, and any questions that anybody has or any input that they have, I know that you've contributed several articles on water safety, and that's greatly appreciated, and we dispense all of that information to anybody that wants to jump on and online and join in. So I think that this is a great way to kind of disseminate as much information as we can, as your program does.
Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Steve.
On 24 hours.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, but again, your Facebook is the Ultimate Survival Zone. So again, well, we'd like to have everybody visit us next week on The Healthy Way, and we'll be here at 1 o'clock. So thank you for coming to our show. Take care, Dr. Steve.
Great show.
Thank you. So again, if you need more information, you can contact us at area code 772-919-8702. You have been listening today to The Healthy Way. Thank you for joining us. I am Dr. Roy Speiser of Clean Water Revival with my co-host Kim Jones of Prescription and Wellness Shop. For more information, the toll-free number is 800-444-3563. Again, 800-444-3563. See you next Tuesday at 1 p.m. for more on how to improve your overall well-being. Be well.